Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Ana Mateo in Washington. A degree from a college or university is often the key that opens doors of opportunity, doors to a better job and a better life. Without a college degree, many jobs are simply not available. In the second half of our show, we will hear about a program that offers international students who may not have access to higher education a chance to reach their goals. But first, we talk a little more about community colleges. Just as the name states, community colleges are local, so they are easy to get to. A person does not need to move to a different city to attend a community college program. And the cost of community colleges is much lower than tuition at four-year colleges and universities. For those people not ready to commit to a four-year program, community college is a great place to start. If you have a full-time job, you can take classes at night. You can experiment with different subjects to figure out what you want to be when you grow up, to use a popular expression. For me, community college was the road that led to a four-year university program, which then led to a scholarship to study in China. For some facts and figures on community colleges, here is Bob Doty.
Suppose you are thinking about attending college in the United States, but perhaps you might not be ready for a university with a four-year program. About 88,000 international students have found a solution. They are attending U.S. community colleges. Such colleges are sometimes called junior colleges. They offer 2 years of education above the secondary or high school level. At the end of their study program, they receive a document of completion called a certificate. Other students work toward an associate degree in traditional academic subjects like science or history. Some students with associate degrees move on to attend a four-year college or university. They may have only 2 years of study left before they receive a bachelor's degree. Many educational experts agree that saving money is a good reason to consider a community college. The American Association of Community Colleges says a public two-year college costs an average of $3,000 a year. A student at a four-year public college may pay more than $8,500 a year for classes and user fees. International students may need more preparation in English before entering a four-year school in the United States. For example, Istrif Montgomery came to the U.S. from Kosovo in 2006. He soon will graduate from the University of Maryland's University College. But he did not begin his college-level education at the university. First, he spent 3 years at a Maryland junior college with, by chance, the same name as his last name. He worked to improve his English at Montgomery College for a year. Then, for the next 2 years, he attended classes in basic subjects. Some international students at two-year colleges need to find a place to live. Most community colleges do not provide student housing on their grounds. But Mr. Montgomery had a home nearby. I'm Bob Doty.
And I'm Anna Mateo. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. In the first part of the show, we talked about the value of community colleges in the U.S. Next, we will hear about the Community College Initiative Program. It is a program that targets international students who may not have many education choices. Education reporter Geralyn Watson has more.
Today, we tell about a program at some American community colleges for students from several nations. It is called the Community College Initiative Program. It is for students from areas underserved in education and skills training. Since 2007, about 2,100 students have taken part in the program. The Bureau of Educational Affairs of the United States State Department provides for their needs. Three consortia, or organizations, of community colleges administer the program with the Bureau of Educational Affairs. Schools across the country take part. Sider Rahman is project director of the Community College Consortium led by Northern Virginia Community College. He says United States community colleges offer possibilities for foreign students whose governments cannot do so. He says many students in poor, rural areas do not have an equal chance to succeed.
So there are many students who don't have opportunities like those who are in some of the major cities. They are underserved by the government in education, in health, in services like opportunities for entrepreneurship. So that's what is meant by underserved. So one of the unique aspects of the U.S. and more so in terms of the Community College Initiative Program is to reach out to those kids to see if given the opportunity that they also will accept.
At the start of their stay in America, students deepen their knowledge of English and learn about their school's surroundings. They have several fields of study to choose from, including information technology, business administration, the hotel and visitors industries, media and journalism, engineering, and agriculture. Students attend classes and study at school, but they also are active in other school activities. They hold internships at businesses and nonprofit organizations. Students also give presentations about their countries to other students and to local communities, and they do many hours of community service. You can get more information about the program from the Public Affairs section of the United States Embassy in your country. I'm Geralyn Watson.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Tune in tomorrow for another As It Is from VOA Learning English.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, This is In the News. A powerful earthquake struck an area near the northern coast of Chile on Wednesday. The earthquake came a day after an even stronger quake hit the area. The earlier quake was blamed for at least 6 deaths. The United States Geological Survey says a 7.8 magnitude aftershock hit northern Chile late Wednesday night, local time. Magnitude is a measurement of energy released at the center or source of an earthquake. U.S. officials said the aftershock was centered about 23 kilometers south of the port of Iquique. They said it struck at a depth of 20 kilometers below sea level. The aftershock led Chilean officials to order thousands of people away from coastal areas. It also led to warnings of high tsunami waves in parts of the Pacific Ocean. The orders and tsunami warnings were later canceled. The aftershock struck a day after an even more powerful earthquake hit northern Chile. That quake was centered in an area about 100 kilometers northwest of Iquique. The city is home to nearly 200,000 people. The quake was felt in Bolivia and Peru. It also led to tsunami warnings as far as Japan. The warnings were canceled hours later. Chilean police and soldiers guarded coastal communities to prevent attacks on homes and businesses. Television video showed damaged buildings in Iquique, but officials found surprisingly light damage from the quake. President Michelle Bachelet visited the affected area. She spoke to the nation about the disaster. She said appropriate measures have been taken to protect lives and property. And she said the government will continue to work all the time that is necessary to deal with this emergency and protect our citizens. Rafael Abreu is a scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey Earthquake Information Center. He says the earthquake activity began with a magnitude 6.7 quake on March 16. More than 100,000 people were told to leave low-lying areas, but returned later. Earthquakes are somewhat common in Chile. They are also a fact of life in the American state of California. Scientists say a quake of magnitude 8 or higher could strike along the San Andreas Fault in coming years. The San Andreas Fault extends from north to south through California. Thousands died in its last major rupture or movement. That took place near the city of San Francisco in 1906. Smaller earthquakes also can be deadly if they strike close to heavily populated areas. Safety experts say every home needs to have a plan of action, supplies of food and water, and emergency equipment. Kate Hutton is a seismologist at the California Institute of Technology. She specializes in the study of earthquakes. Kate Hutton admits there is no way to predict earthquakes, so being prepared is the best defense. We will have more about earthquakes next Tuesday on the weekly program Science in the News. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. Our story today is adapted from a book for young people called Shiloh by Phyllis Reynolds Naylor. Ms. Naylor won the Newbery Award for Shiloh. It is the highest honor for a writer of children's books in the United States. Here is Shep O'Neill with the story.
My name is Marty Preston. I'm 11 years old, and I live with my parents and two sisters. We live in a little four-room house high up in the hills above Friendly, West Virginia. It's Sunday, and we're having us a big Sunday dinner. My sister, Dara Lynn's dipping bread in her glass of cold tea the way she likes. My other sister, Becky, pushes her beans up over the edge of her plate in her rush to get them down. Ma gives her a scolding look. Just once in my life, Ma says, I'd like to see a bite of food go direct from the dish into somebody's mouth without a detour of any kind. The best thing about Sundays is we eat our big meal at noon. Once you get your belly full, you can walk all over West Virginia before you're hungry again. On this afternoon, I was walking on the road next to the river when I see a short-haired dog, white, with brown and black spots. He's not making any kind of noise, just slinking along with his head down. A beagle, maybe a year or two old. I name him Shiloh. Bet that's Judd Travers' beagle, says Dad. He got himself another hunting dog. We'll drive him over to Judd's. Dad opens the door of the Jeep, and Shiloh leaps onto my lap. When Dad crosses the bridge, I can feel Shiloh's body begin to shake. He's trembling all over. When we get to Judd's place, Shiloh jumps onto the ground. The dog connects with Judd's right foot. Shiloh makes a crying sound and runs behind the trailer, tail tucked down, belly to the ground. Please don't kick him like that, I say. All the way home, I can't speak a word, trying to hold the tears back. I want Shiloh because he needs me bad. A few days later, I hear the noise I know is Shiloh. Soon as I see him outside my house again, I know I'm not going to take him back. Not now, not ever. But for now, I got to keep Shiloh a secret. Up the hill, in back of our house, I make a pen for the dog. With some old wood, I manage to take a piece of potato and some cornbread up to Shiloh before it gets dark. I tell him he's my dog now, and I'm not going to let anybody hurt him again, ever. I prayed to Jesus, trying to figure out what to do. Jesus, I whisper, which you want me to do? Be 100% honest and carry that dog back to Judd so that one of your creatures can be kicked and starved all over again, or keep him here and fatten him up to glorify your creation? The problem's more mixed up than that, though. I'm lying to my folks. I'm not eating the meat I've put away after supper. Every bit of food saved is money saved that could go to buy Dara Lynn a new pair of shoes. Then Ma won't have to cut open the tops of Dara's old shoes to give her toes more room. But the way I figure, if it's food from my own plate I would have eaten myself but give to Shiloh instead, what's the harm in that? A lie don't seem like a lie anymore when it's meant to save a dog. and right and wrong's all mixed up in my head. One day, I sneak up the hill to see Shiloh. His pen is still a secret. I'm lying there petting his head, and he's got this happy dog smile on his face. Nobody else loves you as much as a dog, except your mom, maybe. I figure I'm about as happy right then as you can get in your whole life. That night, I hear Shiloh making a noise up on the hill in his pen. I hear a loud yelp, and a snarl, and a growl. And it's the worst kind of noise you can think of, a dog being hurt. By the time I reach the pen, I see this big German shepherd dog with Shiloh on the ground. There are footsteps behind me, and I'm bent over in the light of Dad's flashlight, crying. We take Shiloh to Doc Murphy in Dad's Jeep. Hardest thing in the world is to leave Shiloh there. Second hardest thing is to climb back in the Jeep with Dad afterward. Dad studies me. You can keep that dog until he's well, that's all, Dad says. Then we're taking him back to Judd. Shiloh's getting well at our house when Judd comes by in his truck. Somebody goes to the dock the other day and sees a beagle lying out on his back porch, says Judd. So I ride over to Doc's this evening, and he tells me it was you who brought him in. Judd stares down at Shiloh, at his bandage and the shaved place where he's all stitched up, and the rip on his ear. Look what you done to my dog, he yells at me, eyes big and angry. I want him back by Sunday. On Friday, I'm on my way to talk to Judd when I see a deer. Then I hear the sound of a rifle, crack. The deer goes down. I can't move. One part of me wants to go to the deer. The other part knows that somebody's out here with a rifle shooting deer out of season when it's not legal. And before I can decide whether to go on or turn back, out of the woods, on the other side, steps Judd Travers, rifle in hand. When he looks up, I'm right beside him. Deer ain't in season, I say. There's a $200 fine for killing a doe. Not unless the game warden finds out, Judd says. And who's going to tell him? I'll tell him the deer was eating my garden. All at once, I realize I got Judd Travers right where I want him. I'll tell him different, I say. Come off it, Marty, Judd says. I'll give you half the meat. I don't want the meat, I say. I want Shiloh. And you're saying, if I let you keep my hunting dog, you're going to keep this deer a secret? Judd asks. Yes, I will, I say. Well, you got to do more than that, boy, because I paid $35 for that dog, and I want $40 to let him go, Judd says. And I want it now. You work for me and pay it off. I'll pay you $2 an hour, and that comes to 20 hours. I'll do it, I say. Closer I get to home, the bigger the grin on my face. I slide into my chair, and I almost have to push my cheeks in to keep the smile from going all the way around my head. Went to see Judd Travers, I say, and I'm buying his dog. Ma turns to Dad. You know, she says, I think it's because Shiloh was hurt. Judd figured he got rid of a lame dog. And at last, Dad begins to smile. Now all we got to worry about is how we can afford to feed him as well as ourselves, he says. But there's food for the body and food for the spirit. And Shiloh, sure enough, feeds our spirit. Monday afternoon, at 3 o'clock, I'm waiting on Judd's porch when he pulls up in his truck. You see that cone, he asks? I want the dirt chopped up so fine I can sift it through my fingers. Now, I see what he's getting at. He's going to make it so there's no way I can please him. Monday of the second week, it seemed like Judd's out to break my back, or my spirit, or both. This time he's got me splitting wood. To tell the truth, I think Ma's right. Judd would have sold Shiloh to me by and by because the dog has a hurt leg and don't walk right. Judd's the kind that don't like that in a dog, same as he don't want a scratch on his pickup truck. His truck's got to be perfect to make up for all the ways Judd's not. The last day I worked for Judd, he keeps bothering me, making me do my work over. I start off for home, not feeling too good in my chest. Just a minute, says Judd. He goes back inside and comes out with a dog's collar. Might be a little big, but he'll grow into it. You got yourself a dog, he says. Goes back inside and don't even look back. I get home that evening, and Ma's baked a chocolate cake to celebrate. I'm thinking how nothing is as simple as you guess. Not right or wrong. Not Judd Travers. Not even me. Or this dog I got here. But the good part is I saved Shiloh and opened my eyes some. Now that ain't bad for 11 years old.
You have just heard the American story, Shiloh. Your storyteller was Shep O'Neill. This story was adapted for Special English by Karen Leggett from the book written and copyrighted by Phyllis Reynolds Naylor. The book was published by Simon & Schuster in 1992, all rights reserved. Ms. Naylor wrote two more books about Marty and his dog Shiloh, Shiloh Season, and Saving Shiloh. Listen again next week at this time for another American story told in special English on The Voice of America. I'm Faith Lapidus.